Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 100-year-old Geb Galley of Moses Lake, Washington. Born in Germany, he was growing up on a farm in North Dakota by age 7, and at age 20, Geb was aboard the battleship USS Nevada at Pearl Harbor. You heard him recall getting dressed to go to church on December 7, 1941, only to be told to report to his battle station, which in his case was the refrigeration room in the bowels of that battleship.
And then, of course, the 5-inch guns were used a few times. I said, what the hell was going on? I mean, we had no idea what was going on. After a fashion, right, we finally got enough communication. He said, we're being attacked by Japanese enemy planes. And then, of course, we got out of the way. You could tell that the ship was getting out of the way. And we even got a minor bump, you know. We bumped the ship that we went around. We knew we got hit with something. And, of course, we got hit with a couple of bombs and, of course, torpedoes. When we get hit with the torpedoes, of course, the ship was sinking. So we got about halfway out the harbor.
Well, yeah, and this is the significance of the Nevada on December 7th. Your ship played such an important role. Things could have ended up a lot differently if you guys didn't do what you did. And when you say your ship got underway, I understand you had something to do with it. There was something you had to do in the engine room to help that happen, right?
No, I was not in the engine room. I was in the refrigeration room.
Okay.
But the guys that had to get into the engine room, that when you're aboard ship, when the ship went underway, you could feel it, the vibration that mm-hmm. was getting underway. Then we couldn't figure out what was happening. Why are we getting underway? But we didn't know what was really going on topside, whether we'd been hit with planes, torpedoes, or whatever.
Because you can't see anything.
No.
But I thought I read that you had to open a valve for one of the boilers or something.
Well, there was one of the main steam lines that was going through our compartment. One of the steam valves that was closed, that was feed the turbines. And so they called down that, of course, we all had to have systems. When you open a big steam line like a 12, 14-inch steam valve, you open up very slowly. If you're too fast, there was too much expansion all of a sudden. So I said, okay, so I'll open up the bypass, and I said, warm it up, then I'll open up the main steam line. He says, the hell with the bypass, open that steam line. So, which I did, then, of course, you had to listen to the snap, crackle, and pop. The steam pipes were expanding so fast, you see. But we were down below three decks, and we didn't know what was really going on. Then we could tell that we were getting on the way. Then, of course, they had to pull away and pull out and go around us. When we got on the way out, I think we took one or two torpedoes and, of course, some bombs.
And you could feel that?
Yeah, you could feel the vibration. Then we realized we came to stop, but we didn't know that we were hit with torpedoes that we were going down. And we got about halfway south the harbor before it started going down. Couldn't go any further. So they parked over on the right-hand side on the channel going out. And then what I found out later on, they signaled them that we were blocking the traffic. So we had to back off and swing over and move over on the leeward side to open the passage so the rest of the ships could get in and out.
Yeah, because if you had gone down and blocked the channel, all the other ships would have been trapped and been sitting ducks.
So, yeah. Well, they could have got around. It would have been tough going.
So your ship ran aground, but it's heavily damaged and the battle's still going.
Well, we got a certain amount of damage on top.
So the Arizona is still there where it got hit. And if a bomb had hit your ship in the same spot it hit the Arizona.
We were parked in front on the other side of the Arizona. So we had to pull out and pull over to get past her.
And all this is happening, but you can't see a thing. You're just relying on what you're hearing and what you're feeling.
Well, the only thing, we were down below decks, the vibration. You could feel the vibration that your ship was getting on the way, and that's all we knew. And the thing, of course, that mining used was running wild. The imagination of what is really happening.
Yeah.
We didn't know. until it was all over with. Then we got up the top side, we seen what the mess was made, then we had to take it from there.
Well, and I want to hear about that and what it looked like from Hospital Point and the aftermath. But I'm curious if you have an understanding now of how close you were to where bombs and torpedoes hit your ship, where some of your shipmates were killed. How close was that to where you were?
Well, of course, I was way down below decks, so I was away from all that. You ever been on a battleship? Well, you can see how big they are and how many decks you can go down there. You can go down 3, 4, 5 decks. The thing is, I mean, you have to let your imagination run wild, what actually happened to what you thought happened.
So up above, there's guys manning guns and shooting, and I believe they got credit for shooting down 5 Japanese planes that day, the Nevada did. But what was your cue to come up from where you were? Did they say abandon ship, or how did you know to leave?
After we got settled and everything, then they said that we come to the top side, and then they took us off and took us ashore on a barge.
And I'm sure you still remember, I know it's been 80 years almost, but I'm sure you still remember what you saw when you got up top side and looked out at this what had been a pretty peaceful Pearl Harbor the whole time you'd been there.
The thing is, I mean, your eyes are going wild. You really can't really distinctly place everything, pinpoint everything down. You grouped everything into one. It was a big mess. By the time we got up topside, practically all the fires were put out, but there was still quite a bit of smoke.
And you saw the Oklahoma capsized?
But after I got up on topside, I seen that she had capsized. Yeah, we had to go around it. As I understand, to where we were first stopped, we were on the way out, of course. We were hit with a torpedo, so we were going down. So they were parked on the one side and said, "You're blocking the passageway." So we had to back off and swing over against the island. Then that's where she settled down. As a matter of fact, if you go over there, you see that plaque that's over there. It tells you what had happened. You're looking at the guy that set it there.
Yeah, I've seen the picture of you placing that plaque there at Hospital Point. Were you able to clean out your locker before you got off the ship?
You left everything where was at in your locker. At least, I lost everything. We were flooding pretty heavily below, so we had to stay on top side. Then they took us off for the one on the island.
Do you still remember what was in your locker?
Well, I had a picture of a few girlfriends. I thought they were girlfriends, stuff like that. And then several suits of whites and several suits of blues and stuff like that. Attire that we have, that the average sailor has.
And what did you do the rest of that day?
The rest of the day, then they took us off and put us over on the island. They had the barracks up there and the mess hall up on top of that hill. I think we were up there a couple, 2, 3 days. Then they took us off and they spread us out between different ships. Then I was transported to Northampton. And then all hell broke loose. When I got aboard Northampton, we had to go out and fight the enemy.
Yeah. Well, and before that, so, you know, that first day, the rest of December 7th and December 8th and December 9th, are you finding out about guys from your ship who didn't make it?
The thing is, what you had to worry about is what you had to do, what was, and you have to see what was going to happen and be prepared for it. You don't remember the state all detailed things that happened. It kind of generality. So much was happening, so you couldn't piecemeal it out and say, well, I'm going to try to remember this, that, and so on and so forth. I mean, as things happen, you see what's happening and you forget about it. Down the line, when somebody brings up the topic, you might memorize some of this stuff.
Well, and I'm just wondering, because anybody who's been to the Arizona Memorial or who's been to the Punch Bowl, you know, they've seen names, they've seen grave markers, they know, you know, there were 2,400 Americans who died that day. Was there anyone that you knew personally that was lost?
No, you knew mostly just the guys on your own ship and in your division, so to speak. Because you got to remember that when there's 1,000 guys on a ship, you know, I mean, so you just pick out one or two or three guys and sort of become friendship with.
When you're looking at Pearl Harbor again, a day, 2 days, 3 days later, and you know that 1,177 died on the Arizona and almost 400 on the Oklahoma.
You didn't know that how many guys died on there. We knew they were hit badly, but how many guys really died from there, we didn't find out until a lot later on.
I'm just wondering, being a 20-year-old kid on a battleship that's right next to the Arizona, and you see what happens to the Arizona and the Oklahoma and the Utah, is there part of you that says, Boy, that could have been my ship that was hit like that.
Yeah, that's right. Things like that happen. You have to look at and see what's happening, and you got to see what you got to do to help save the ship or save the next guy. Things happen so fast, you do things unconsciously. When everything's all over with, and you sit back, you relax, and you try to memorize really what really happened.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth or thoughts in your head. But, I mean, you mentioned looking out the porthole, and you think it's American planes. It's just another exercise or a practice. And then everything that you just described. So as you're soaking that in, is it hard to believe? Is it kind of surreal? Or what was your state of mind?
Things happen like that. Things happen so fast. Why are they happening? How come it's not being taken care of? Then you got to try and figure out, you know what you got to do. You do what you got to do. You got to get down in that hole down there in the refrigeration room. And you go down there and take care of that. And that's all you get. That's your responsibility. What's happening out there, I mean, you see what's happening. Try to put it in your mind and hope you remember it, what's happening.
Yeah. And, you know, you say the word remember, and that became the rallying cry for America. Remember Pearl Harbor. And they sold a lot of war bonds on that and had a lot of people sign up because of that. But I'm thinking about your family back in North Dakota. Did they have any idea whether you were alive or dead?
Yeah, no idea until I got aboard the Northampton, and I was able to write a letter. And the thing was, they got a bunch of postcards aboard ship. Each guy had to write home to his family and tell them that you're okay. And then later on, as time goes on, that he could sit down and write a letter. But you could only write so much. You're very restricted in what you could write in that letter. You couldn't write anything that you're going out to sea or your important stuff like that because of top secret information.
So if you wrote it, they would take a razor blade to it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing was, I mean, there were so many restrictions put on you of what you could write home, or what you could do. They didn't want to get any kind of information out to the public.
Did you ever have a chance to talk to your parents about what that was like for them? Because I imagine they heard on the radio Pearl Harbor's been bombed and they know that's where you are.
We had no communication there. Later on, you could write a letter and tell them that I'm okay, and the thing is, I hope you're okay, and that's it. Yeah, you couldn't write anything where you were at or what you were doing aboard ship or anything at that time. Very top secret.
And I understand you feel differently about the Japanese now, but right after Pearl Harbor, how did you feel about Japan?
they were our mortal enemies. So what can you think about them? How can you do this to us?
So there was some anger and desire to strike back?
When something does something like that to you, how do you feel about it? You can answer that yourself.
Sure.
These things happen. You do the things that has to be done at hand at the time, and that's all you are concerned about.
Do you think it's important to remember Pearl Harbor and what happened there? And if so, why?
Well, yeah, I want to remember what happened. Pearl Harbor happened. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a past memory.
For people like me or my kids or your great-grandkids who didn't live through that, what do you think is important for them to know about what happened at Pearl Harbor?
They can read about it, and they can draw their own conclusion on it. Really, what can you do? You can answer that.
I think most Pearl Harbor survivors I've met, you know, they've shared that slogan, remember Pearl Harbor, keep America alert. That there's this idea of there's a lesson there that we need to be prepared. Is that something that was important to you?
Well, the only thing I can tell you, when something like that happens, stay on your toes. Stay alert to what may happen or could happen.
That is a mindset that is still relevant 80 years later, but it would be very relevant to Geb aboard the cruiser USS Northampton on November 30th, 1942. We're going to hear how he made it through that fateful moment as well when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.